Hi and welcome to another program. I have invited another guest, one whom I've actually met twice many, many years ago, almost 20 years since the first time. And we met in Egypt and then later in Istanbul. And I was instantly impressed by his faith, his calmness, and he had a lot of knowledge. So I want to say welcome to you, Ross Patterson.
Thank you, Rebecca.
How
lovely to
you?
Be here. Very good, thank you.
Yes. So before we start, could you tell me a little bit about you and where you're from?
Sure, certainly. I'm from New Zealand, a little country in the South Pacific. I guess I'm fifth generation New Zealander, if you want to call it that. New Zealand's a small country, and so we have to travel a long way from everywhere, of course. I guess why I was over in the Middle East and where we met is because we were following up, we were researching the discoveries of Ron Wyatt. And that's what led me to make those trips to the Middle East. And they're still ongoing, of course. That was in 1999, when we met the first time, I think.
Yeah.
Now, that was interesting. That trip came about because we had actually invited Ron Wyatt to Australia. I was living in Australia at the time, working there. And myself and a group of friends invited him to come to Australia and New Zealand to do some talks, some meetings. And that was in 1998. And after that trip, he really enjoyed himself. We had lots of people coming to hear him talk about his discoveries. And then we invited him back again. And on the second trip, he said, "Do you want to come to the Middle East with us and see these sites?" I said, "Sure, I'd love to." So that was how that trip came about. The sad thing was he was not very well at the time. And okay. He couldn't make that trip in 99. That was in, I think, January of 99. No, anyway, February, somewhere around there. But after the we went to the Middle East, and we were very blessed because when we were in the Middle East, when we met you and your mum, and we got shown around to all these sites. Of course, your mum, Ellen, knew the sites very well, having taken Ron there, and of course, you knew them very well. So that was a real blessing. Even though we weren't there with Ron Wyatt, we were able to visit the sites and hear all about them from yourself and your mum.
Yeah.
And
you knew a lot before you came there. you were teaching us about several things, so you had a lot of knowledge before you came to the site.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because when we invited Ron to Australia, most people thought it was fantastic, but there were a few individuals specifically who were very opposed. One of them was a very well-qualified doctor, Dr. Russell Standish, who's well-known in some circles. He'd actually written a book against Ron Wyatt and his discoveries, a whole book. Yeah. Now, he lived in Melbourne, as we did, and we had lots of face-to-face discussions. I knew him personally. And so when he began opposing Ron's research, we had lots of discussions with him to find out what's your objection, and then we'd answer his objections, then he'd raise up new objections, so we'd have to answer those. And so it was actually quite a challenge, but maybe a blessing in disguise, to have to respond and answer to all the objections that this gentleman raised up. And it made us look into these discoveries very thoroughly and find the answers to the questions that people raise. So that was a blessing in a way, if you know what I mean.
yeah.
And of course, having dug into it and in the Bible and other inspired writings, we were thoroughly convinced that what Ron discovered is exactly these sites. You know, he wasn't making it up. See, the position of the critics is Ron's a con man. Ron was a con man. He's making this up. But, yeah, you know, yeah, when you look at the sites and think, what would you expect to find? I mean, what would the geography of the Red Sea crossing be like? Where should Mount Sinai be? You know, what would you expect to find at Sodom and Gomorrah? You know, all these sorts of issues. It becomes really clear that Ron was used of God to find these sites, I believe.
And why do you think that so many Christians? Yeah.
Go on. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah. Why do you think so many Christians have an initial problem with evidence or archaeological evidence that confirms the Bible? Why do so many have a problem with it? You would think that Christians would, you know, the moment they hear it, they would be happy about it and try to find out more about it. Why are they afraid of archaeological discoveries to investigate it? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, absolutely. You know, in our experience, most people were quite enthused about these discoveries. Most people, the majority. But it seems that there was a vocal minority that were opposed. And the ones who were opposed had lots to say. So maybe it seems like they had a bigger voice in these things. That's my experience anyway. And the question is, why would they oppose these things anyway? I mean, surely as Christians, we should be thrilled that the Bible is being confirmed. And, you know, I guess the analogy that I found fits very well is, you know, when Jesus came 2,000 years ago, he was the Messiah that the Jews had been expecting for hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, the Jews for hundreds of years had been waiting for a Messiah. They'd sing songs about the Messiah. They'd pray for the Messiah to come. But when he came, he wasn't what they wanted. And rather than say, well, look, is this the Messiah? Does he fit with the scriptures? They thought, no, he's not going to do what we want, because they wanted someone to get rid of the Romans out of Israel.
Yeah.
And Jesus wasn't going to do that. And so they rejected him because of their wrong understanding. Or maybe some of them thought, we're happy to have a theoretical Messiah, someone we can dream about, but the reality, this person here, this carpenter from Nazareth, he the Messiah, and they couldn't accept that. And I think a lot of Christians, maybe the minority, but many, are like that, is they're happy to talk about spiritual things, but when you say, look, here's the reality, here's the location where the Red Sea crossing took place. Yeah. Here's the actual mountain where God gave the law. Some of them don't like to face the reality of these things. They like to keep it in the airy-fairy, if you know what that term means. You know, keep it in the... Make it all spiritual, but not the reality. And I think it's the same with the Jews. When Jesus came... Yeah, exactly. People don't like to face the reality. Keep it theoretical, keep it in the background, keep it in the churches or in the synagogues, but don't tell me about the reality. I don't want to know. I'm happy with my life sort of attitude, if that makes sense.
It doesn't, though, because when you are a Christian, I'm thinking, when you are a Christian, it should be about... wanting to have a closer relationship with God, trying to understand more, you know. So in a way, I don't understand it. But at the same time, I do see that what you're saying is true. People, they don't want to follow a living God. They want to follow a historical God, sort of.
So I guess people like to...
When you were...
Go on, sorry, there's a delay, sorry about that.
there's a sound delay. So for anyone listening, we're not being rude to each other, we're just having a sound delay. I was going to say that the first time you heard about these discoveries, What was your initial reaction? And
Thank you. That's a good question. See, I was brought up in a Christian church. Yep. And of course, we were taught, I went to Christian primary school, you know, school. And so we knew all the Bible stories, Noah's Ark, all those sorts of things. And when I was in my teens, a movie came out in the theatres about Noah's Ark being found. And I thought, wow, okay. The reality of that. You mean something I've been taught to believe from stories suddenly might actually have some substance to it. That really inspired me. So I went along to see this movie. Very disappointing. It was all about theories and blurry pictures and nothing concrete. But still, it was inspiring to think there actually may be some remains, you know, some proof, if you like, of what we'd been taught as children. Then later, when I heard about these discoveries, again, I thought, wow, this is fantastic. Because, you know, we live in a world where you've got the majority of the media and the universities teach and believe in evolution.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the theory that there's no God, we've come by about by chance, you know. And to be a Christian, it's a paradigm that is opposed to that. We're saying, no, there's a loving God that created us. We're not here by chance. Evolution didn't happen. It's not over millions of years. God created the world about 6,000 years ago out of nothing. Those are quite different ideas. And of course, as Christians, we believe by faith that the Bible's true, that evolution is not how it happened. And then to find physical evidence that confirms and backs up what we believe by faith is inspiring. It's encouraging. And that's why when I heard about Ron's discoveries, I thought, wow, this is either a very elaborate hoax or Ron has found some stuff. You know, this is serious, because what he was sharing was very specific. It wasn't, you know, there might be something up that mountain in the mist. It's saying, here is the site. Here's the location. Here's the visitor's center. Here's the road where you get to it. Here's the government building the visitor's center. You know, this is very specific. This is things that you can check out. You know, it's not like a story, well, I was up on a mountain and in the mist I saw something. It looked like the end of a boat, but I lost my camera, you know. Right. Nothing like that. This is saying, here it is. And so that's when I got very interested and researched thoroughly into it. Yeah. And what a blessing.
And you've had many trips to both Turkey and Israel.
Yes, and Egypt and Saudi Arabia.
You've gone once, you've gone many times to research.
About 15 times now, I think.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And have you learned something more than what you knew from before you went to these sites?
Yes, absolutely. What struck me, first of all, is that everything we could research ourselves was exactly as Ron Wyatt said, because the critics would make Ron Wyatt out to be a con man. No, he's lying, he's exaggerating, he's making stuff up. But everything, and even more than that, more than what Ron shared, fitted exactly with what he said. I mean, to illustrate, the critics in Australia wrote to the Israeli Antiquities Authority and got a letter from the Israeli Antiquities Authority saying Ron Wyatt never had a permit. And yet there was an American archaeologist who said he'd gone to the Israeli Antiquities and helped arrange Ron get a permit. And yet the Antiquities, I guess the front desk, the receptionist, if you want to call it that, they have a standard letter saying, no, Ron never had a permit. So what's the truth? We went to visit some people in the antiquities department. It was the head of the Jerusalem archaeologist, the head of archaeology for Jerusalem at the time. He's fairly well known. And we never mentioned Ron White. We were asking permission to do some scanning that would show up the tunnel that Ron talked about under the city streets of Jerusalem. And we went to ask them about getting permission to do this. And they asked us, I was with an American friend, and they said, oh, okay, are you archaeologists? And we had to say, no. They said, oh, okay, do you work for a university? And we said, no. And they said, one of the head archaeologists said, well, you can't just come to Israel and do that kind of archaeological research. And we thought, oh, well, there goes that project. Then the other gentleman, out of the blue, said, did you know Ron White, did you? Now, we hadn't mentioned Ron White. We hadn't discussed the Ark of the Covenant, for example. But just knowing where we wanted to scan, this archaeologist said, did you know Ron White? And I said, yes. And I explained how we knew him. We brought him to Australia, stayed in his home. Then they said, oh, okay. In that case, you tell us what you want to do, and we'll arrange it. It'll be under our umbrella. We'll arrange all the permits and everything. And they even wrote to the Garden Tomb Authority to ask them to give us permission to do the scanning there. So there's a totally different attitude if you talk to the right people. Even though they might officially deny Ron had a permit, they're actually bending over backwards to confirm his research. Do you know? And it's things like that which were very encouraging, showing that Ron was not a con man at all. If you talk to the right people, you discover that he had a lot of respect amongst the top circles.
Of course, this is not something people know. They think that the only thing that exists is Ron's word that these things happened, and it's not. I can actually, when we were on 5 trips with Ron in the Middle East, and he had connections and got us places. He could only get us with connections, and he was also actually still excavating when we were there with him. So and he didn't do it in hiding. So there are lots of witnesses that he had permission to do it. It's just that they don't officially say he had it. So but you know,
Exactly. And the critics, though, who don't dig deep enough, they'll say, oh, okay, he never had a permit, therefore he's making it all up. But, you know, the critics, the biggest critic who wrote the book, never even went to go and check out the sites themselves.
Right.
And this is what I said to him, look, I said, look, put aside people for a while and just go and ask yourself, where did the Israelites cross the Red Sea? Where is Mount Sinai? Right. Forget about the arguments over people and whether they had permits or not. Where are the sites? And they never had an answer, which was the strangest to me, because here are Bible-believing Christians arguing against evidence for a fantastic site, and you think, what are you trying to achieve here? Are you trying to prove the Bible's not true? And yet this is what was going on. It's really strange.
So I'll tell you what I've heard a lot from people is that they say that we don't need this to believe. You know, we have faith in the Bible stories. We don't need these things. Have you gotten comments like that, and how do you answer them?
Absolutely, yes. We've had that a number of times. And what I say to critics who say that is this. I say, yes, absolutely. You believe the Bible by faith, and so do I. I believed it long before I heard of these discoveries. But there's a lot of people out there that are sitting on the fence. And evidence like this can help convince them that the Bible is true. There will always be people who, no matter what you show, won't believe the Bible. And there are people like us who believe the Bible anyway. But in between those two extremes are a lot of people sitting on the fence. And I've done public meetings on these discoveries for, well, many years now, for decades. And I find people, well, I could say how many people have been baptized as a result of hearing that the Bible is true and then accepting Jesus. We've done programs in the Philippines. We've had hundreds of people baptized. And in Australia and New Zealand, we've had dozens of people baptized by hearing that what they're taught in the media regarding evolution, for example, isn't as true as the Bible. The Bible can be shown to be true by the stories being confirmed. You know, so there are people that it does help a lot. And yes, for Christians who believe the Bible, sure, you don't have to go and prove where the Red Sea crossing was. But for a lot of people, that can be life-changing to learn it's true. So that's how I answer that criticism.
Right. And then it would be a problem if you get in the way of someone else getting to that information who might need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a good idea.
So to say we don't need these discoveries is a little bit selfish, if you know what I mean, for someone to say that.
right. Yeah, it is self-absorbed. But, you know, as I also mentioned in my other podcast, most Christians, especially in the Western world, I don't know if New Zealand and Australia is called the Western world because you're somewhere else than the rest of us. But what is very in Europe, and I think also in the States and in Canada, it's more and more normal, and especially in Europe, is that you don't evangelize as a Christian. You're not supposed to evangelize. You're supposed to keep your faith to yourself. It's something private. And you're not supposed to try and reach other people. I mean, Christians don't evangelize anymore.
That's similar here.
In that sense, okay. So in that sense, they don't really see the point of... maybe they don't think that this is something I can use to reach people because they don't think like that. But why do you think like that? Why do you stand out from the rest of them and feel a calling to actually reach people? Is there a story behind that, or is it just something that came gradually? You felt the burden for souls, or?
Well, yes, that. Also, I guess, see, being brought up as a Christian and going to Christian school and then going to a secular high school in New Zealand where it was totally different. It was evolution is true, you know, it's just accepted evolution as norm. And as a teenager, I had to wrestle with, you know, what is true? Is what I was taught as a child from the Bible true? Or is all that just a big fairy tale? Because it's life-changing. You know, if you believe there's a God who loves us and created us, it's a totally different paradigm, if you know that word, than if you believe we're here by chance and this is the only life we have and you may as well live it up and do what you want because, you know, we're only here by random chances anyway. You know, so what if I go and steal and rob and murder? It doesn't matter. We're just, you know, it's totally different philosophy. And I had to wrestle with this coming from, shall I say, a sheltered Christian environment out into the big world. And then accepting Jesus by faith when I was in my 20s, saying, look, I accept God no matter what, you know, and thinking, how do you reach people? And I haven't found anything better for reaching secular-minded people than these discoveries. You know, we've experimented with running seminars on prophecy, and prophecy is fantastic. And we are people based on prophecy, you know, Jesus came according to prophecy. But in terms of reaching a larger audience, I found nothing better than presenting archaeological evidence for how the Bible is true. Typically, we get twice as many people come to hear about the evidence for the Red Sea crossing and Sodom and Gomorrah. than you'd have coming to hear about, say, the images, the beasts in Daniel chapter 7, for example. Now, that's, don't get me wrong, the understanding prophecy is crucial, it's vital.
Yeah.
But just in terms of reaching people to invite them out to come and hear more, these discoveries is a better, a more powerful way of reaching secular people. At least at this point anyway, that's what I find. In Australia, New Zealand and other countries like the Philippines, I've been to Japan and shared these things. For example, in Japan, I was invited there by a ministry, and they've done, Japan is very secular, as you can imagine. They have like 2 or 3% a Christian, very small numbers. And yet we had, when we did a seminar on Noah's Ark, we had 500 people coming out, and the ministry said, we've never had anything like this before.
Oh, wow.
It's because people like to know the reality of these stories, you know?
Yeah. They don't want to believe something that's not true.
Absolutely, yes, exactly. So I hope that answered the question.
Yeah. So, you know, we can't forget about God in all of this. And it might be why he gave these discoveries, to give his people a tool to reach out to people. Because you mentioned before, atheism and evolution is taught in schools all over the world, and most people have been taught that, you know, the Bible is a fairy tale book, and the creation story is false, and there is no God. And a lot of people, they come with their childhood faith, and they come into these schools, and they actually lose their faith. And so for God to provide something that actually shows people that, hey, the Bible is actually true, all of these things actually happened, it's very understandable, because God is losing people because of what is shared in universities and schools.
Absolutely. And, you know, there have been studies done, people brought up Christian in the States, then they'll go off to college, and the majority of them lose their faith because evolution is just assumed to be true in the universities. It's assumed to be true in most of the media. And I guess young people who've been taught to believe in the Bible come into an environment where it's just assumed that it's not true. They just, you know, absorb that philosophy, that thinking, and leave high school or college skeptics, you know. It's a rampant problem. And so you get ministries like Answers in Genesis who rise up to try to oppose that, you know. But anyway, carry on. You were asking.
No, I was just going to comment that in my country of origin, we used to have a state church for many, many years. And so they had this place where you could go and be educated to become priests. Actually, for all the different denominations, you go to the same university to become a priest. And actually, most that go there, they come to this school to learn how to be ministers and priests, and they have a faith, and they actually lose their faith from going to this school that teaches the Bible. You would think it couldn't possibly be true, but it's
reality. Is so many even Christian places of education make people skeptics.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is, the evidence is there to show that the Bible is true, but it's ignored by the mainstream media and these in the academic world at large. And so it's left with people like you and me to sort of say, hey, look, the evidence is there.
Yeah. Those that, of course, there's been a lot of critique against these discoveries by Christians and non-Christians. And what do you think, if you're going to put yourself in their place, What do you think? How am I going to say this? What do you think is the reason why they think it's possible that this is a deception?
Well, we know the world is full of deception today. In fact, Jesus, when he remember his disciples asked him about the signs of the world, end of the world, first thing he said was, take heed that no man deceive you. So we know we live in a world where deception is rife. And in the book of Revelation, it says the devil that deceiveth the whole world. So people are almost weary. They're war weary, if you like, from just being in a world full of deceptions. And so it's understandable when something new comes along, people go, oh, here's another deception.
Yeah.
But like the Bible says, prove all things and hold fast that which is good. And this is the thing, these discoveries of Ron are not difficult to prove. It's and this is one of the issues we had with the critics in Australia. We said, look, why don't you just come over and have a look, you know? And then come all the excuses. Why not, you know? Now, sure, you can't just get up and go on an aeroplane to the Middle East that easily. But if you're going to attack it and criticize it and write a book against it, as one critic did,
he should
at least take the time to research it properly and not simply accumulate critics, you know, arguments from websites. Oh, excuse me. Sorry about that.
Yeah, because if you Google Ron Wyatt's and get to the, for instance, the Wikipedia page, it's not very promising.
No, that's interesting. You know, Wikipedia is supposed to be an open source, you know, and I went to correct, because some of the language on the article about Ron White was quite slanderous, you know, just the way it's worded.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll tone it down. For example, one comment said, a self-styled archaeologist. And I thought, that's not a very nice thing to say. He didn't style himself. So I edited that out, and then it got rejected by someone saying, you're vandalizing the web page. So there's a real bias against anything that you try to, you know, present as true or correct. There's so many critics out there that will stop the truth getting out. We're in a war, you know, we're in a war between truth and error.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So what we can do is... Go on.
Yeah, go on.
All we can do is present the truth to those that will listen, and we may not be always get it through the mainstream avenues like Wikipedia or the news media.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes doors have opened. We've been able to get on the media in New Zealand sometimes. And there's a channel, and TV channel in New Zealand, that is airing very positive programs on these sites. So there are avenues, you know. The world won't be left without a witness. God will see to that.
So what do you feel has been the greatest challenge? Because from what I've seen on your Facebook, and is that you've been a lot of places preaching these discoveries, and you've been very active for many, many years. But what has been the greatest challenge, you think, that you had to face when you've been doing this?
The greatest challenge comes from the vocal minority. Once again, most people are happy to come and listen. They're inspired by these discoveries, but it always seems to be a few people in key positions of influence that try to stop it. This has happened over and over and over again. It's
just
almost
stop the meeting
as if.
From happening.
Yeah, that's happened sometimes, yes. For example, I don't know if I should name names, but there's places where churches would like me to come, but the administrative office has said no, even though most of the people want to hear these things. And, you know, this is the thing. This is exactly what happened 2,000 years ago with Jesus. The Bible says the common people heard him gladly. So why was Jesus so opposed? It was because a few people in key positions decided we can't accept this as Jesus as the Messiah. And you know why? Even Pilate knew that it was for envy that the Jews delivered Jesus up. That the Jewish leaders were envious of Jesus, and it was the Jewish leaders that turned the common people against him. Even though the common people heard him gladly, Jesus healed their sick, he preached wonderful things to them, he fed them. They loved him, but he was crucified because the leaders, out of envy and jealousy, decided we got to get rid of him. Because, and this is human nature, when people get into a position of power and authority, they like to hold on to it. You know, even when Jesus was born, and the angels announced his birth to the shepherds on the hills, why did the angels go to the shepherds and not go to Jerusalem and announce it to the leaders there? It's because the shepherds were open. And we read in Desire of Ages that the leaders in Jerusalem were not ignorant that angels had visited the shepherds, but it says they wouldn't even go to see if these things were so. They didn't go to check it out because it would put them in a bad light, because they said, we're the expositors of the truth. We're the leaders in Israel. If God's going to do anything, it'll be through us. And God bypassed them. So that was embarrassing for them. So rather than acknowledge, hey, maybe we better change our attitude, they tried to shut it down. And when Jesus came, they wanted to kill him. And human nature hasn't changed. Ron's discoveries challenges a lot of preconceived thinking. Do you know what I mean? There's people who have made a career out of teaching things that are probably wrong or based on tradition. Here comes the truth. And so rather than saying, oh, it was wrong, I better change my views, they try to shut down the truth. That's the reality.
Right. Okay.
It happened in Jesus' day, and it's happening again today. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, but that's what's happening.
Well, history has a tendency to repeat itself.
It does.
So it did happen. Yeah. Unfortunately, humans don't change very much.
Exactly.
We still have our same faults and blemishes, and it's going to cause the same situations to happen over and over again.
Exactly.
So have you ever experienced, you know, I'm going to ask a lot of questions here, so
fire away.
Have you ever felt like you wanted to give up, or have you ever felt like God had to help you, push you forward? Do you have any testimony?
Yes. I wouldn't
like
say
that?
I've ever wanted to give up, because I know these things are true. Having checked them out, dived in the Red Sea, been to Mount Sinai, all these things, I know they're there. You can't hide truth. What's most discouraging is when you want to share it and there's people that are opposing it. And those that are opposing it are the very ones who should be promoting it. You know, Christian leaders should be saying, yes, look, wonderful evidence, the Bible's true. And they're opposing it. And you think, it just brings home what a war we're in. So I've never been tempted to give up believing these things or teaching them. But it's been disappointing at times to see doors closed in some places. And yet God will open doors in other areas, you know, that I never could have imagined. Traveling overseas, invites to overseas, like the Philippines and Japan, Pacific Islands, Australia, etc. Those
so I know
things that I've...
Yeah.
Go on, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's fantastic how you've been able to... get around and speak. It's really wonderful. I also know that you for a long time wanted to go to Mount Sinai, and that's the place I've never been to. But you've been there. Is that something you can talk about? Yeah.
Yes, that was a blessing again. And like your previous question, is God opened doors? Yes, I believe God opened the doors for this. A good, very good friend of ours found contacts in Saudi Arabia. It's almost impossible to get a tourist visa to go there. Actually, Saudi Arabia is changing. Things might ease up now, but certainly in the past, they had no interest in tourists coming.
Right.
But that may be changing. But anyway, God worked through another avenue, through some business contacts that a friend had, to open the doors for us to be able to go there. And so we were able to get to all the sites that Ron had mentioned. And exactly as Ron said, it's all there. The split rock where the water comes out, that a perfect candidate for that event when Moses struck the rock and the water came out. The golden calf altar, the peak all blackened, the altar at the base of the mountain, all these things, exactly as Ron described, they're all there. And
were you able to
when
take
you look
pictures
at the,
and
yes, that's the thing. When we went, we didn't know what to expect. And so whether we could take a good camera in or whether we just use our phone, you know. And I took the risk of taking a good camera in, and we had no trouble at all. It was fantastic. So I think perhaps God is moving to change the environment in Saudi Arabia from being ultra conservative to being a little gone.
Have you made any video on your trip to Saudi Arabia, or do you plan to make one?
I'm working on one, yes. God's opened the door to put this on a nationwide TV channel in New Zealand. So I'm putting together some footage. Unfortunately, that first trip, I didn't go with the intent of making a good documentary. It was just sort of getting some footage where and where we could. It'd be great to go back and do a proper filming trip. Again. But anyway, we got enough to show, look, it's there. The evidence is there. So, yes, I'm working on something now to put together.
I hope it's for the rest of us too, and not just TV in New Zealand. If it will.
We'll have it on YouTube.
Right. That's good. That's good. I would look. I'm looking forward to that. I really like the other small films, short videos that you made. They're very informative. And do you have a web page, maybe for those listening, so they know where to go and find things that you've done?
I do have a website. It's not developed very well.
Okay.
I should put a lot more work into it. It's discoverynews.net. Okay. www.discoverynews.net. And there's some videos on there. But yeah, it needs a lot of work on that website. But anyway, there's something there for people to see.
And there's some videos with you, I think, on YouTube, where you talk about the different discoveries and where you have seminars. I don't know the name of the YouTube channel. Do you know it?
There's different channels. Different people have recorded it. So if you just, I guess, search for my name.
Search your name.
You'll find.
Yeah,
you'll find different channels have different meetings recorded.
Yeah, and these are very good meetings because you go through the Bible and you use the Bible to show why it has to be at the place where it is. And not some other place. So they're very good.
Thank you. Ron's come under such a lot of criticism, and in a sense, that's kind of like a distraction. It's not about Ron White, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't say Ron White claimed this, Ron White said this is where it is. It's just say, look, the Bible says this, and here's what's found. And I mean, I'll acknowledge Ron was the one who found just about all of these things. God used him mightily. He was a pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
But when I present to the public, it's about, hey, look, the Bible says this.
Yes.
And here's the evidence. It's exactly what you'd expect to find. And so, because I found in the past, if you mention...
Go on.
I was just saying in the past, if people go home and get on the internet and look up Ron White, they go, oh, he's a fraud. Doesn't that speaker know that? You know, that's just how people work. So anyway, go on. Yes, you were saying.
Yeah. That is my experience too. People that never met Ron and they've never been to any of the sites. And I tell them that, you know, I knew Ron and I've been to most of all the sites except Sinai. And still they want me to listen to them when they tell me he's a fraud. They don't want to hear what my experience is. And that's been always very surprising to me, especially in the beginning, because I was very young. My first trip down there with Ron, I was only 18 years old. And I remember I was so surprised. I said, but don't you want to hear what I've seen and experienced with him? Why should I listen to what you tell me about a person you never met just because you heard someone say something? So I always found that strange. But what I was about to say is that the way you view it is that maybe that Ron just led people's, and God used Ron to lead people's attention to the evidence that was there. And then we were meant to open up our Bibles and be inspired to reread these stories and then use it to show people that the Bible is true. And so the focus on Ron becomes a little bit off the subject in that way, because God used him to draw our attention to these important stories in the Bible and that they are true.
Yes, exactly. The argument over Ron, whether he's a fraud or not, is a little bit of a distraction from just getting the message out that the Bible is true. However, I will say this, just to qualify that, I do believe that God used Ron to find something very significant,
mm-hmm.
which hasn't yet been brought out clearly, and that's the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
And so it's that is, dare I say, quite unbelievable
yeah.
in the minds of a lot of people. And I believe God allowed Ron to find these sites which are easily confirmed to give credibility to what he said about the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
And
yes, because
it's easy when you hear gone, yeah.
I don't know that I'm interrupting you because I just hear a break. So you can go on.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so when it comes to the Ark of the Covenant, there is no, and I believe God has done this on purpose, there's no solid proof. It's not like a site where you can just go and visit and see it. Mm-hmm. Understandable. If you could just go and see the Ark of the Covenant, it wouldn't be there anymore.
Right.
So God has given something credible, many things that are credible that you can confirm with Ron, so that we can accept what he said about the Ark of the Covenant. And then when you take what he says and go back to the Bible, you start to see it in the Bible as well, which you may never have seen if you hadn't heard what Ron had shared about how the blood went down. I doubt I would have, don't think anybody would have connected the dots, so to speak, unless Ron had said that's what he found. And then you go back to the Bible and you say, yes, the Bible does say that, but it wasn't that obvious, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. I just became speechless. Yes, it does. It does. So do you have
because
any...
what he claimed about the Ark of the Covenant is amazing, yes. As you know.
Yes. Yes, it's very amazing, but I also believe that well, we can go to the Bible to find out if this discovery is true too. So yes. I think the evidence is there if we're looking for it. Now,
yes, exactly.
Is there something else you would like to share or tell about these things or about you?
Well, I'll share this. There's a lot more research could be done. I believe God used Ron mightily to locate so many sites, including the Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. But just about all these sites could have more research done on them. For example, the Red Sea crossing site, just to illustrate, we've done a lot of scuba diving around the shoreline. I've dived on both sides now, probably about 120 dives. And you can find some evidence. I'll be honest, it's not easy to find, but that's understandable because it's been 3,500 years since the events took place. And so, you know, you're not going to find a museum on the bottom of the sea.
No, of course not.
But, you know, we've only scratched the surface. You know, yeah. We've dived off the shore, but it's 15 kilometers across there, and there could be a lot of stuff out in the middle. Mm. Now you ask, what will be left behind? Well, obviously all the wood would be gone, probably the bones are gone, but anything made of gold or brass or bronze could still be there. And so in theory, there should be an area on the bottom of the sea there littered with Egyptian artifacts. But to do that kind of research, to get a submarine, for example, to go and survey the bottom or get photographs, it takes it to a whole new level. And
right.
So if any of your listeners wants to support a project like that and fund it, we're very open to such ideas.
Okay. Then they contact you.
Or you, they, either or.
Well, I'm not going down there.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't worry, if you're in a sub, you're safe.
Yeah, it's true, but I have claustrophobia as well, so. No, but.
Okay, fair enough.
Now I completely forgot what I was going to say. I have to try and... No, it's great. I probably would love to go down in the submarine. I pray God for bravery, of course. Anything is possible with a little faith. And I still don't remember what I was going to say. Getting permissions from the government of Egypt might not be the easiest thing either, or how, because I remember, you know, when we were down there in 1999, we could freely dive there, but then I heard that they made it forbidden or something to dive in that area, so they seem to have some restrictions. Do you know something about that?
Yeah, the last time we were diving, as you say, in 1999, we could just dive freely. And for many years, it was the same. You just go there, hire the gear, go where you want. The last two times we've gone, they've said you cannot dive unless you have a permit from the police. Right. And that's anywhere. Any diver must get a dive permit before they do any dive. And I understand now, as you say, they've made it even more restrictive. So it's like the doors are slowly closing up, which is sad. And of course in Egypt, it's particularly hard, a lot of control and restriction. It was interesting, when we were in Egypt recently, we had a bit of a run-in with the police, because we were using a drone and they didn't like that. And we were discussing, they said, why are you here filming this? We said, well, this is where the Red Sea crossing took place, where Moses led the children of Israel through the Red Sea. And we believe Mount Sinai is over there in Saudi Arabia. And that's where Jethro lived. And they said, yes, we know that's where Jethro lived in Saudi Arabia, but the mountains here in the Sinai Peninsula, which isn't very logical.
Yeah.
And so they don't like the idea. It might affect that. Anything in Egypt, and even researching biblical things in Saudi, is difficult because of the politics, because it seemed to be confirming Jewish history, and there's not a lot of interest in some of these countries to confirm the validity of Jewish history. That's how they see it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, proving that Mount Sinai exists is like showing that there is a genuine Jewish history, that the Jews might have some claims to that mountain, they think.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the funny thing is, in Saudi Arabia, we met some people that said, yes, this is where Moses crossed through the Red Sea. They knew exactly where it was.
Yeah.
So
Moses is important in Islamic. Yeah. Well,
I'll tell you what, here's something interesting, though. You know, the research that came up recently, and you may know this too. When we were traveling with Ron, he shared an interesting story that you may recall this. He talked about a time when there was an earthquake in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to, they'd actually closed one of the pyramids because it filled up with methane gas.
Oh.
You remember this story?
No, I don't.
Okay, this is something.
Yeah.
Okay, this is one of the things that Ron told us years ago, personally, when we were traveling with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, years and years ago, there was an earthquake, and they had to close one of the pyramids because after the earthquake, it filled up with methane gas. And Ron got thinking, where would that methane come from?
Oh, yeah.
Now, when the Egyptians would seal up a tomb, they'd put food in there with the person they were burying, so they had food for the afterlife. And after thousands of years, of course, that would all rot and turn into methane gas.
Yeah.
And they used to make their tombs airtight. They'd seal it so it was no air could get in or out.
Mm.
And Ron got thinking, if there was a hidden tomb in the pyramid with all this food and other things in there that turned to methane, and the earthquake cracked the airtight seal, that could be where the methane came from.
Right.
To cut a long story short, he found a location where he believes that methane came out.
Yeah, actually, I do know what you're talking
about. He showed it.
Yeah. He showed us when we were down there exactly where it was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And our good friend Aaron showed me where that was.
Yeah.
And you know what's really exciting? Just recently, in the last year, a Japanese university was doing some tests. They set up some gear to see if there's any hidden voids in the pyramid, and they found one. This is totally independent. They found a void, and guess where the void is? It's right where Ron said that there could be a hidden chamber in there.
Yeah.
Now, he shared that years ago, and it's only just recently that this team has verified that there is a void back there. I mean, that's amazing. Again, it just shows Ron was not making things up at all.
No. Yeah, that is amazing. Actually, I have a story about that chamber, because I was talking to Ron about it, because I was very interested in the pyramids for some reason back then. And he ended up saying that when he opened it up, I would get to be the first one in to take pictures. So he never got to fulfill that promise to me, because, of course, he was laid to rest. So, you know, I'm gonna mention that to him when I see him in heaven. But it's very interesting. He did believe that there was another tomb there, with the remains of one of the rulers. So, but I don't know if they found anything more. I haven't been keeping up with the story. Did they just see a void, or did they see if there was items inside there, or do you know something about that?
The scanning wasn't detailed enough to see if there's any items. It just showed that in that direction there was a large void. What's in there remains to be seen. But it's interesting that so far, Ron, what he said has been, it fits exactly with what Ron said.
Yeah.
Even though he had no reason to share such a story.
I think that's what I found interesting too, that a lot of the things that Ron said actually that I didn't feel made much sense. Not this one, but other things that he said that I didn't feel like made much sense. And I investigated it later, and it turned out that he was right. So that has always been the end of my research is, Ron was right. So I haven't been able to catch him in a lie or you know. I have no reason to doubt him at all. But of course, people keep telling me to doubt him. Yes.
You know, it's a blessing having known him, because when the critics portray him as a con man, I can know that is not true, because the Ron White that the critics portray is not the Ron White that I knew.
No.
And where this is important is because there's a prophecy about the tables of stone coming out from the ark one day. And if people are rejecting Ron White's discoveries on the basis of who they thought Ron White might be, when that event happens, they're going to say, oh, this is another fraud, this is a con. So they're going to put what God is going to do, we know from prophecy in the future, bring out the tables of stone, they're going to start calling that a fake or a deception, and they're setting themselves up to reject the work that God's going to do. It's very sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. Yeah, well, I think the only way to... continue.
Yep. I was just going to say, any more questions?
No, actually, we passed 1 hour, which was the time limit. So I think maybe we have to talk more often. Oh. Maybe do another one some other time, because I know you've done...
Okay, sure.
You've had many experiences at Noah's Ark as well that you didn't get to talk about. And, you know, you have more experiences than you've talked about. So there's still a lot. But maybe we should end it this time. It's been very interesting.
Sure, okay.
Everything you've said and all your experiences. And, wow, you've done a really big... big job and reaching a lot of people. I hope people that are listening will Google Ross Patterson. I'll put his name underneath because I probably didn't pronounce it correctly. And that you Google him, look at his seminars and anything that he's doing. If you want to help support his work, that you contact him. You can probably contact him on Facebook or through his website that he mentioned earlier. So I think we can say goodbye now. It's been really nice.
All right.
Thank you.
Wonderful to catch up again. Thank you.
Yeah.